was about 4 years after his ordination as a Roman Catholic priest that Father Gerard Dowling was sent to university to study social work. By the late 1960s, all commercial radio stations were required under Australian Commonwealth law to broadcast 1 hour of religious programming per week. And in 1973, Father Dowling became the family counsellor on what was then known as the Greater 3UZ, now known as RSN 927. Father Gerard says since he first opened his microphone more than 40 years ago, radio has changed a great deal.
In those days, Lifeline and those sort of services weren't readily available for people, which thank God they are today. So they're 24 hours, 7 days a week. So its solo capacity isn't quite as much required. But I'd say, you know, over the journey, it's just amazing the number of emergencies that I was called on to be involved in, yeah.
What are some of those that perhaps are the most indelibly fixed in your memory?
Well, it's hard to believe, but I actually had a man confess to murder one night. So I arranged to meet him, but he was eventually picked up by the police before we actually met. So he actually confessed to a particular murder, which is a really sad one down in St Kilda. And
that would have, if I can just interrupt, yes. Had he not been picked up by police and you had met him, that would then have placed you in a very invidious position, wouldn't it?
It could have, very, very delicate. The Lord intervenes, you think. Yes, I think one of the dimensions that's come out many times has been loneliness. I remember one particular call, a fellow rang and he said, look, I've got a terminal illness. I'm living in Melbourne. I come from interstate. I've got no friends. And the response of people was extraordinary. People wanted to take him into their home. They wanted to cook him meals and so forth and so on. Eventually, of course, the family heard about it and they took him back and he died interstate. But it was typical of the fact that talk work programs aren't just between myself and the person calling, but very much the listening public, and they can oftentimes get involved, yes.
And obviously says a very great deal about the fundamental goodness of people, doesn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. I think that over the journey, we look back at Black Saturday and those sort of times, and they're terrible, terrible events, but the goodness which has flowed out of those things is extraordinary.
Mm. Your program seems to be very, what I would call, time flexible in the sense that you never appear to be in a hurry to get from one caller to the next, which is certainly the case, say, on commercial radio.
Yes, well, fortunately, right from the very beginning, we've never had a time limit on the duration of the call. Nobody stepped in and said, look, 3 minutes, that's okay. And I noticed with some commercial talkback programs, they get pretty short shrift. But no, I think if you're trying to deal with people, especially if they're worried and upset and anxious, if they get that impression they're taking your time or it's creating difficulties, well, they're less likely to be open and forthcoming. Of course, the famous 7 seconds delay is interesting, which can cut out anything that shouldn't go to air. But it's very, very, very rarely used.
I would imagine that over the years you must have learned a great deal about not just listening but actually hearing what people are saying.
Oh, yeah. That's very good you mentioned that because, well, of course, in the counselling, one of the most valuable things, especially with initial interview, is sometimes you might say very little. It's the person pouring out their heart to you. And that's interesting in our society because so many people need somebody to hear them, you know. And so often, even marriage partners and members of the families don't seem to be able to do that for their own problems, yeah.
And, of course, in this digital age, with the emergence of such things as texting and the so-called networking sites like Facebook, MySpace and Twitter, the word itself, social, is somewhat of a paradox, I feel, because people, in fact, are having fewer social face-to-face experiences with one another and conversations, aren't they? So I imagine that for some people, your program really is become even more important in that they're able to actually talk to a real live person and have somebody actually listen to them and respond.
Yes, it's interesting you say that. So often these days we ring a number, we get a prepared message and we get referred to several prepared messages down the line and you're just desperate to get someone who talks to you as you are.
I imagine that you've received many calls over the years from listeners suffering
life-threatening illnesses. And in fact, that was a position in which you found yourself about 6 years ago, didn't you?
I did.
Did that experience in any way change your approach as to how you dealt with that same issue on your return from convalescence?
I don't think it changed that. It certainly changed me in the sense it's different between being a spectator and a participant. It's amazing how much for a major part of my life as a prisoner counsellor, I think I was there to help people. But being a recipient of that situation, as you put it, of a life-threatening illness, it really fundamentally changes your whole approach to life.
People seek your ear, your counsel. From whom did you seek counsel at that time?
Oh, well, of course, obviously, I turned to the Lord. I have some very wonderful priest friends who were very supportive. I did have a spiritual director. You know, funny, you mentioned that one of the most difficult things I found suffering from cancer was actually telling people that I had cancer. People were shocked. They almost imagine you'd never get sick. And yes, some people, their breath was taken away. They would just sit there and take some time to let it register that this is really happening.
Mm. Is it a little bit like death, do you think, that people really don't know what to say at a time?
Oh, yeah,
like that?
Very similar, as you would know. I remember once a girl on our staff, whose marriage I had officiated at, 16 months later, was killed in a road smash. I remember going out to her home to see her husband and spent some time there. And as I was leaving, his one of his best men from the wedding, one of his best friends, met me at the gate. And he said, well, what do I say? And I said, look, all you need to do is be there. And I think a lot of people hesitate to approach people in mourning because they're not sure what to say, so they dodge doing it. But being there and not having all the answers is very, very important, that somebody is there, that presence of a person is very important.
On a lighter note, your love of football.
And yes.
In particular, the North Melbourne Football Club, for whom, of course, you are the official historian,
I believe.
That's
right, yeah. Yes.
Obviously, your references to that during your program resonates with a lot of people listening to you.
Well, of course, it's funny, especially here in Melbourne, AFL football is just so much discussed, whether it's the kids at school or elderly people in nursing homes or that sort of thing. It's the lingua franca of the winter season. And so it does bridge a lot of gaps when you're talking with people. And, of course, that's been an interesting experience too, because when I wasn't in parish life, I was able to spend a lot of time with players' families, officiating marriages, baptisms, weddings, all these sorts of things. It's interesting getting behind the exterior things, all the stuff that's just trotted out in the so-called media, to meet the people. They're ordinary human beings with challenges and problems just like the rest of us.
I imagine talking football in many ways makes you more accessible to them in a sense, doesn't it? I mean, it makes you more of one of them, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah. Fortunately, as we're talking, we're having some success. It's amazing how you cope better with success than failure.
Yes, indeed. Do a little crystal ball gazing for me. Where will you be in 5 years from now, do you believe?
Me or the club?
You, the club, the program, yes. Where will Father Gerard be?
Well, of course, that's one of those things. Mm. I'm very fortunate that over the 5 years since I suffered from lymphoma, I haven't had any of it in my system. And I see my specialist regularly. Now, at the moment, the variables seem to indicate that I should live for quite a few more years. But one doesn't really know at all about the future. I think with the North Melbourne Football Club is interesting because in many ways we're the poor relation. We struggle to get membership compared with, say, Collingwood and even Richmond and so forth and so on. The big decision not to go to the Gold Coast amazed a lot of people. Like, take the money and you'll be right. But we would cease to be the North Melbourne Football Club anyway. So I think that decision was very difficult, but nonetheless a wise one. And I think now we're starting to reap the benefit. I think we are now well entrenched here in Melbourne and doing reasonably well.
I've been talking to Father Gerard Darling, host of the Family Counsellor program, heard every Sunday on RSN 927 between 10 p.m. and midnight. I'm Michael Lynch for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.